It's time for Let's Talk Money.
Good afternoon, Chattanooga. This is Let's Talk Money with Jamie O'Donnelly and Jim Place. 267-1023 is the number. Starting our market day, Dow Jones Industrial Average is down 48 points, sitting at 32,867. S&P down 4, sitting at 4,116. Jim, how are you?
I'm doing fine.
Good. With us today, Stephen Adams and Cal Marshall with Chambliss Law. How are you guys doing?
Doing great.
Doing great.
Glad to have you here. Let's start introductions. We are going to focus on a specific topic today, which is intellectual property, which could result in a good radio show. The downside is Jim nor I knew much about it. So we learned a lot this morning.
So our game plan was to rebrand our company, and we're going to use these like yellow arches.
Yeah, it doesn't work that way.
And you guys are going to tell me I probably can't go that direction?
Might not be a great idea.
Yeah. All right, let's start with you, Stephen. Why intellectual property? That happens to be your focus.
That's right. I've got an engineering degree that I went to UT, University of Tennessee, and got an engineering degree. Was wanting to design engines for cars. And so I got a mechanical engineering degree. And turns out that I couldn't find a job doing what I wanted to really do. And so I said, well, I'm not really enjoying this engineering thing so much. What else can I do? So I talked to family members, and they said they need engineers in law school. I said, why the heck
would they need
an engineer in law school? And it turns out that to be a patent lawyer, you've got to have a hard science background. You've got to have an engineering or a biology or a chemistry degree, because you have to use that degree to take a separate patent bar that's in addition to the normal attorney bar. And so that's your ticket to be able to take that second bar. All patent attorneys have to have some sort of hard science background so they can talk to the engineers or the chemists or whoever that they're working with on their inventions.
How long did it take you to find out that you made a good choice?
It wasn't that long, but it was a while. When I got in, I was like, man, what have I done?
You know, a lot
especially
of work.
The first day of law school, I was like, what have I done myself? But it's been really great. I've been doing it for almost 11 years now, and it's been really, really great. So, one of the things about inventions, patents, is that everything is new. And, every day is a new experience and a new technology. So that's really one of the best parts of the job. So.
Cal, how about you? What's your focus?
My focus is general business and healthcare. Mostly serve healthcare clients and serve them, in a variety of different areas, everything from regulatory, advising on regulatory issues to contracting and a wide variety of business issues. One of the things, I'm not, my primary focus isn't intellectual property, but certainly with what I do have to be conversant in these issues and definitely do work with Stephen on a lot of specific intellectual property issues that come up in client matters that I work on in my more general areas.
Now, when you use the term intellectual property, there's a variety of different things that term encompasses.
Yeah.
We're talking about trademarks. We're talking about patents. I mean, I'm assuming when people come to you originally with an idea, a thought, something that they want to, or in your case, you work within the framework of the healthcare business, and then you may be bringing two or three different entities together that are going to work on designing something, and you're looking at protecting that design on the front end before it's even created.
Yeah.
Indeed.
And all of a sudden, where your expertise is in healthcare, you turn around with Stephen or someone else and say, look, we think we've got X, now you've got to determine how, because it's different. If I do a painting and I want to protect it, it's one thing. If I have an invention and I want to protect it, it's another.
That's right.
If I have a brand or a trademark and I want to protect it, it's another. It's not all of it would be deemed as intellectual property, but how it might be handled would be completely different.
That's right.
Exactly.
And a lot of times, one thing can actually be multiple or can be covered by multiple intellectual property, types of intellectual property. A single product can be covered by a name, a trademark. Can be covered by a patent. It can also encompass, some sort of written material or something that would be covered under copyright law. So one of the things that we do when we first, meet with a client is we just try to decide, what is it that we're trying to protect about this? Because it might, there might be multiple, you know, aspects of it that can be protected just using various tools under intellectual property law.
Is this, do you have a standard or a layman's definition of intellectual property? I mean, I think when I think of it, I think patent, copyright, like very specific terms, but it feels like it's broader than that.
Well, it could be any creation of your mind, essentially. Like you've thought up something, you know, a name, an idea, an invention, really anything that your mind can create. And then we've under the law decided that we're going to protect, you know, those ideas in certain ways. You know, outside of the U.S., there are other types of intellectual property that we don't protect here in the U.S. But, you know, here in the U.S., it's, you know, patents, trademarks, and copyrights, trade secrets. Those are the four major categories.
Does it ever astound you why major corporations would do business in a country like China that does not adhere to intellectual property laws and rules?
China is huge.
Because they have to.
It's a big player, but in essence, you may or may not be able to protect. Can what it is you build in China be reverse engineered by some Chinese corporation somewhere down the line? Probably much more so likely than it would happen in the United States.
Well, you know, a lot of my clients, they'll ask about international protection and whether we need to go to, you know, wherever. And a lot of clients, they're just trying to get their business up and running here in the U.S., and if they can do that successfully, that's going to take care of them. You know, international IP protection is quite expensive. You know, in thinking through whether we even want to go to China or go to Germany or go to wherever, you know, that's way down the line a lot of times and very expensive. So usually we're just thinking U.S., and that's enough.
When we're talking about, when I think about intellectual property, Golden Arches, you made the joke, Jim, at the start of the show, obviously, McDonald's. Trade secret, Coca-Cola formula, things like that. Where does this come into play for smaller businesses or individuals? Take it away from that big company, huge company area that we think about to how it might be relatable to me or a small business owner out there.
Well,
yeah, I can certainly speak to that. And Stephen and I've worked together on these issues before. But one place that it comes up is with whether it's an established business or a new business, you know, they'll have want to form an entity, so they'll have an entity name. They may want to file for some assumed names, say with the Tennessee Secretary of State, for example, and have some assumed names they operate under as well. They, you know, immediately need to consider the intellectual property issues associated with use of that name locally first. You know, to figure out if there are any conflicts involving other similar names locally, but also they need to think broader than that in some cases. You know, businesses that operate and have clients in other states, as well as businesses that are expansion-minded and may want to expand into other areas down the road, definitely need to think about protecting, you know, making sure that there aren't any conflicts with other similar names in other areas they want to expand, and addressing those issues as early as possible in the process. Because once there's a lot of goodwill, a lot of value associated with particular branding, with particular names, it can be painful.
Out is that you could operate with that name in the state of Tennessee with no issues, but now you're in the state of Texas.
Exactly.
And you've got a company suing you for intellectual property rights relative to their branding, their name, or whatever the case would be. And all of a sudden, you've got to change the structure of what it is, at least to do business in the state of Texas.
That's right.
Yep. And that's tough. It can be very painful to make changes in branding down the line. And so, always good to the extent possible to get ahead of those things at an early stage.
You know, early in the stage, though, one of the things you have to think about is the fact, is the idea or the process good enough to hire you? You know, where I'm trying to figure out, I got a small business, I'm trying to get that business up and off the ground. I can't necessarily cover every single possible thing that could happen out there. How do I have a sense and a feel whether it's time to come to someone like yourself, or do I just go to someone like yourself and have you tell me whether this is worthwhile or not?
Well, and yeah, that's a great question, and that's a lot of times clients will forego that meeting. They'll say, I can't afford it, or I can't, mm-hmm. you know, and then they will do something or, you know, publish something that will deprive them of patent rights, you know, or do something with their trademark that will put them in, you know, in hot water on that front. You know, I always will am happy to meet with a client on the front end and say, hey, here's kind of, you know, the issues that I'm seeing. Here's, you know, general outline of cost, and here's why you might think about hiring us. And here's some options for you, you know, knowing that money is maybe tight for a startup, or, you know, here's how we might allocate those resources. So just to kind of give them some guidance on, you know, here are the major things that you should be thinking about, and let's try to avoid some of those issues before, you know, before they crop up.
Well, I would always remind people that dealing with these issues after the fact is going to be considerably more expensive than dealing with these issues before the fact.
Absolutely.
Yes, that's often true.
267-1023 is the number. This Let's Talk Money. We'll be right back.
Let's Talk Money. Talk Radio 102.3.
We're back with Let's Talk Money. 267-1023 is the number. With us today, Cal Marshall and Stephen Adams with Chambliss Law. During the break, we were talking about an example of how this process might work. And one of the first questions was that I had for you, Stephen, was, do people even recognize that they need you, that they have something that needs patented, they need, or whatever it may be?
Sometimes. I would like to think that they would all the time, but that's not the case. A lot of times they'll come to someone like Cal, or, you know, someone else in our firm, and they'll, you know, in that transaction, it will come up that says, hey, have you thought about protecting this or that? That's intellectual property. And the client says, oh, I've never thought about that. And then that's when I'm brought in to kind of help and advise.
Cal, walk us through an example, one you've been through or something that would be a likely scenario of where you would bring Stephen in.
Sure. A fairly classic trademark example, for example, would be a business that has been operating for quite some time in Chattanooga under its existing name and branding. But they want to expand into a new market where they've, you know, had no presence previously. And they, in the course of doing that, realize there's another business in a, let's say, maybe a similar industry, maybe not the exact same industry, but providing similar services, or in a similar industry with a similar name. They might come to me and say, now, hold on a second, am I going to run into an issue here? And that's the point at which, you know, I'll call Stephen, and we'll begin to work through those issues.
I mean, I'm operating a business in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and I make, for whatever reason, the determination that we want to open and do business in Birmingham, Alabama.
Yep, exactly.
Now, Birmingham, Alabama's got to be researched the way Chattanooga, Tennessee was originally researched, from the standpoint of brand name and whatever else it may include.
Right.
Exactly. And oftentimes what I'll recommend with a client that is going to, you know, establish new presence elsewhere, or particularly a client that serves customers all over the country, is as they begin to work on their branding, you know, seriously consider a federal trademark search, so that we know about other marks that may be out there, and whether you're likely to run into any conflicts down the line.
And kind of a another way that it might come up, where you're not expanding to a different location, is instead you're expanding your product lines.
Mm. Good point.
Yep.
You know, you've established this product line under this name here in Chattanooga, but now you're going to, you know, branch out into something else, and now you're stepping on someone else's toes that are, you know, they're using a similar name.
What happens? So you, whether it be branching out product-wise or changing locations or increasing locations, and there is a conflict, what do you do?
It depends. You know, in trademark world, it depends on whose rights started first. You know, did the other company start using the name first, or did we? And depending on the answer to that question, we'll determine what we can do or what we can't do. If we're in the unfortunate situation where they came first, then we have to either change our name or do something else, usually.
But it's easier to do that on the front end than it is to run into that same issue on the backside.
Sure, sure.
Exactly.
Absolutely. You don't want to be operating as an infringer for years and years, and then you get a knock on your door, or you get a letter in the mail that says, hey, you know, you've got to change your name, and you've got all this branding and all this merchandise, you know, which could be hugely expensive.
Yeah, and sometimes the conversation we have is on the opposite side. It's we may find out about, you know, say our client is First, you know, is using the name First, has a prior right to a particular name, but they find out there's another business, or we find out there's another business elsewhere using a very similar name in a, you know, another market that's close by. Then we, you know, of course, have to have that conversation about, well, what do we need to do in this situation? Just looking at all the practical issues here, what do we need to do to preserve the client's rights?
You bring up an interesting point, because take the name of our firm, Evergreen Advisors, the Evergreen piece. Mm-hmm. There's 1,000 Evergreen companies out there. And as we researched it in the state of Tennessee, we found out that we probably did not have a conflict in the state of Tennessee. So the fact that two different small businesses have the same name, if they're not operating in the same field, doesn't really have a lot of impact necessarily, does it?
It probably not. You know, if you guys really we're concerned with in trademarks are the customers, are the consumers of those services, are they being confused? You know, if there's an Evergreen Advisors down the road from you all,
yeah,
and they're calling you thinking that it's them, then that's obviously a concern.
But Evergreen Tree Service is obviously a different business than Evergreen Advisors.
Right.
If we back up a minute, let's kind of go through the different aspects of intellectual property. Start with patents. What is a patent?
A patent basically is a right that it gives you the right to say, hey, you can't make this thing. Your competitor can't make whatever it is that you've patented. And you have that right for 20 years. You can tell competitors for 20 years, you can't make this thing that I've invented. It's funny because a lot of clients will come in thinking that it's necessary for them to get a patent in order to make that, you know, whatever their product is. But it's actually kind of the reverse. It gives you the right to tell people that they can't. And so patents will cover inventions, you know, products, processes, you know, new things like that.
Now, it's your job to convince the patent office that my invention is unique enough that it can be patented.
That's right. Yeah. Every invention, in order to be patentable, has to be new. You can't repatent old things that maybe the patent expired on. You can't.
So you get the 20 years and that's it.
That's
There's
it.
No
yeah.
renewing it or going back after
right.
that point.
Right.
Has to be new. How many of your patents, is it common that some are turned down? Or maybe how I should say this is, where you would tell the client on the front end, you would probably recognize that before going through the process if this simply clearly wasn't something that you were going to be able to get a patent on.
Yeah, it's a tough call. You never want to tell someone that it's not going to be patentable. And mm-hmm. then they go to, you know, to someone else and they get
sure.
a patent. But what you do say is, you know, based on what I'm seeing, based on what's out there, you know, based on what you've told me about your invention, this might be difficult to patent. You know, it's going to be an uphill battle for you.
Let's go to the phone lines. Hi, Mike. How are you?
Hey, Jim and Jamie, love your show.
Thank you.
I have never called in because I haven't had the opportunity, but I have a question for the IP guys. My son and I have started a podcast, which is kid-themed, so there's a lot of original characters, a lot of original story, and we're so excited about it, we might transition into some sort of printed material. What do I need to start doing? Because we more or less did it on a whim and just put it all on the internet, and now I'm kind of scared to have that content out there without any type of real protection that I can see.
Yeah. Mike, what you're talking about is copyright law. It falls under copyright. The nice thing for you is that as soon as it's created, you have copyright protection. You can expand that protection if you register those works, the podcast or the written materials, if you register those with the U.S. Copyright Office. The process is fairly simple, and it's not hugely expensive, so it's a lot of times worth it.
Now, does Mike do that on his own, get on his computer, or does Mike call Steve?
He can. Either way, we can do it for you, or you can do it yourself. It's an application, and you submit a digital copy of the work to the Copyright Office, so... And in a few months, you should get a registration certificate.
That's actually...
That is pretty awesome. Thank you so much. I just started listening, so if you don't mind giving your number or an email or something like that, that I can contact you.
Sure, Mike. Stephen Adams with Chambliss, Bonner & Stoffel. I can be reached by email at sadams@chambliss.com or by phone. My direct dial is 423-757-0211.
Thank you, Mike. We appreciate the call. Hi, Stephen. How are you? Or hi, Steve. Sorry.
Hey, guys. This is not anything to do with me, but I've seen where the Elvis Corporation or whatever they're called sent a cease and desist to all those Elvis wedding chapels and stuff out in Vegas. My question is, they've allowed it for decades. Would there not be some kind of, like, they didn't do anything about it for a certain length of time, so they're out of luck? Or is there really going to be able to stop all that?
Thank you, Steve. We appreciate the question. All right, Stephen, now you address it.
Yeah, so that's...
Then I'll ask mine, because I have a similar one.
That's a right of publicity, and that's a state-by-state law. And so it's really just going to depend on the state. Tennessee, because of Elvis, has a pretty stringent right of publicity provision. Because of the estate. So in your particular case, I'm not sure if they're going to be able to enforce that or not, but I would imagine here in Tennessee they would be able to.
So it would be all state by state and whether your state's laws were strong enough to make it enforceable.
Right.
All right, since we're on the theme, did you see the Top Gun copyright lawsuit this morning, or I guess last night when it came out?
Yes.
These are pretty common.
Yes.
Seems like they have a case.
Now, what was the...
So the
there was an original agreement between the author of the article and the people that created the original Top Gun movie. And I believe
the movie was based on the article.
Okay. 1986. I think the agreement was signed sometime in 1985. And apparently these people were compensated relative to the first movie, but there was a time frame in which they had that authority. They did not re-seek the authority for the sequel movie that they made that came out in 2020, and apparently their rights to do that ended in 2020.
Okay.
And there's a case where you would have had to gone back and reestablish, because now they're using the premise of the original article to make the second movie that they have not compensated somebody for now. Whether it ends up having merit or not, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, the argument was that they were sent this, they knew about this in 2018, they had to do it by 2020, didn't do it. And obviously, we don't know who's in the right here, but it does seem odd that a company that big that does this for a living would miss something of that nature. Is it common that large corporations mess this up?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I can see the argument behind smaller companies or really quickly growing businesses not recognizing this.
Yeah.
It seems more surprising that these big companies that do it every day would have the same issues.
Yeah, I'm sure it happens all the time. But you know, copyright can last for 75, close to 100 years. You know, and so what you're probably talking about here is a license to use the original article.
That's what they talked about. It was a license to use it for a period of time.
Yeah, and so it's expired, and they needed to renegotiate a license. So it sounds like it didn't happen. And if it didn't, then we'll see.
267-1023 is the number. This Let's Talk Money. We'll be right back.
Let's Talk Money. Talk Radio.
We're back with Let's Talk Money. 267-1023 is the number. With us today, Stephen Adams and Cal Marshall with Chambliss, Bonner & Stoffel.
All right, Stephen, break down the different items. What's what?
Yeah, we started on patents.
We started on patents, but what are the different... What do I get for what?
Sure.
Whether I have a piece of art or whether I have a computer program or whatever, how do I protect
what? Again, patents are usually the things, the things you've created, the inventions, the processes that you've invented, that's covered by patent. Trademark's probably the second most common thing. You know, in my practice, it's about 50-50 patent and trademark.
Okay.
So that's your branding, the names of your products, the names of the services that you're providing. That's trademark. And then copyright is the written materials, the artwork, the movies, the music, you know, the things that you might use in connection with your branding, maybe. And then the last one is trade secret, and those are things that you want to keep secret.
That would be the Coca-Cola formula or something of that KFC's, nature out there.
Yeah, yeah, that kind of stuff. So,
is one more difficult to get than another? Which is the most complicated, or is it all going to depend on the circumstances?
Well, the easiest one is trade secret.
Okay.
There's no filing. There's nothing required. You just keep it secret and maintain it as secret. On the other side, patents are probably the most complicated to do, which is why you probably should get a patent attorney to help you with that. And then under that, less complicated is probably trademark. But patents can take years to get, you know. Trademarks can take months. So.
Where do you see the most infringements? Where do people get in trouble the most?
Trademark. Because you have companies that start with these names.
Everybody has a name. Oh, yeah. Or every business has it. You have to have some sort of name.
And how you get hurt is really not doing the proper research on the front end in that case.
That's right.
Based on the market that you're going to be involved in.
That's right.
If that's the most common one, what should more people be doing more on the front end? And how do you weigh the cost versus the potential risk or benefit in the future?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. They should be doing more on the front end. You know, before you pick this name, see if it's going to cause problems. And, you know, that search, it might sound expensive to you to have a lawyer help you with that. But one letter from, you know, another company that says, hey, you have to stop using this. You have to stop using that name. You have to destroy all of your inventory. You have to, you know, destroy all your branding. That's going to far exceed.
Really, really hurts when that happens. Yeah.
If you've got someone out there starting a business, and they really can't afford to pay the attorney, what can they do themselves? Are there online resources? Can they do an adequate amount of research on their own?
They can. You know, there are trademark databases. The U.S. Patent and Trademark Office has a database that you can go and search. You just have to figure out how to search it. And that's why you would come see a patent attorney, is they know how to search and what to search for. You know, Google searching, you know, online searching. So what you're looking for is other companies that have similar products or similar services using a similar name. You know, if they are in a completely different area of the country, that might lessen the concern. If it's a completely different product or a different, completely different service, that's probably less of a concern.
Well, where is the issue with, in essence, I own a business. I have four people that work for me, and they're research people out there. And one of these people that's a W-2 employee of mine, really, my time, my money, my space, creates XYZ. Mm-hmm. Where are the debates, or what type of debates do we have on the front end as to who really owns this, quote, intellectual property, whatever it may be?
Yeah, you know, that's an issue that Cal sees a lot, but that is certainly a question that should be answered, and it's going to really just depend on the circumstances, because it can make a lot of difference on the future of your company.
Cal, could that include non-competes? Would a non-compete be a part of something? I mean, obviously you could have a non-compete out there and you've got a whole set of laws on what you can do and can't do in that world. But if I've got two or three research people working on XYZ, how do I know I own it and they can't leave me and go to XYZ and take what it is they've
done? Well, one thing to consider is contractual protections around work product, what they create in the work that they do. Now, the situation is a little bit clearer with employees. You know, they're working at your facility.
You mean employees as versus independent contractors?
As opposed to independent contractors, exactly. When you're using an independent contractor, whether you'd sort of classically define them as a vendor or as a personnel, that line can get a little more blurry, and that's where you want to be more careful. But in either case, certainly helps to have clarity around work product that I guess we'll call them a staff member, whether they fit within either category. If you call them a staff member, what they create in the process of doing work for you, doing a project for you.
Do you have examples of where this might be an issue? It seems like there would be a lot of cases where something at least on the edge of this could come up?
There are all manner of variations on these types of things. And sometimes it'll be impacted by the circumstances. What has the employer or the engaging company, you know, allowed in the past? Have they sort of ratified certain behavior in the past, certain practices in the past? There are all sorts of circumstances that go into determining, you know, who really owns what in a particular situation.
So one example where you might have, you know, within a company, you might have two different employees or two different people treated differently. Say I've got a researcher and their job is to come in and solve a problem for me, and they solve that problem with some new invention. You know, their rights, the rights there are going to be different than if I have, say, you know, a janitor that invents something that was not in the scope of his employment, but invents the same thing, right? So that's one scenario where you might have, you know, within the same company, two different outcomes.
And when you get in situations where people may be using their work email for personal purposes, they may be using some company resource for personal purposes, the lines can get very blurry. Did this person really create this thing, invent this thing using company resources on company time? Those lines can get very blurry.
That's interesting because, I mean, I see a local TV show I've watched in the past, Chicago Fire, where you had the fireman that invented a new type of axe. Now, in that particular case, the fact that he was a fireman did not leave control of that axe with the city of Chicago Fire Department. In essence, it was a byproduct of what he did for a living, but it really wasn't what he was hired to do, and he was able to patent that process.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah. So it's all going to be, you could have the same scenario in different outcomes, basically,
yes,
depending on history and behavior.
Which I might add leads me to the fact that historically, I'm going to be better off with a better attorney.
That's right.
On the front end.
Yes, very much so.
267-1023 is the number. This Let's Talk Money. We'll be right back.
Let's Talk Money. Talk Radio 102.3.
We're back with Let's Talk Money. 267-1023 is the number. With us today, Cal Marshall and Stephen Adams with Chambliss, Bonner & Stoeffel. Go back to the patents for a minute. If you think you have and I guess we could really use any of these. You're out there, you're running a business, you have a conflict, whatever it may be. Someone has infringed upon you. What's the first step? And how do you know who to trust to talk to about any of this stuff, whether it be on the front end or the point that a conflict arises? Because the whole point of all this is to protect things.
Sure.
Well, first off, if I call Chambliss, the first thing Chambliss is going to do to see whether they have a conflict of interest. Have they represented the other side in some way, shape, or form?
That's right. Yeah. The first thing is try to find a lawyer. And you know, the law, we are supposed to be helpful. And so we have an obligation of confidentiality. We have to protect client interests. You know, even if you're just a prospective client, like we can't go out and talk about your stuff.
Yeah.
So you can kind of feel secure in talking with a lawyer. That's set up to encourage that discussion with lawyers as they try to find some representation. But that's the first thing you would do is just try to find somebody, whether it's to go to your business attorney or, you know, whoever that you work with and say, hey, who should I talk to about this issue? And hopefully they can get you to the right person. One of the nice things about Chambliss is that we have people that can, you know, work with you regardless of, you know, or pretty much regardless of whatever kind of issue that you have.
Yeah, that's a real benefit because it's one of those, you're going to have if you don't know it, maybe that's Steven's specialty or whoever else's specialty to kind of direct you in that way. What does this stuff cost? What do people need to expect to pay? Just maybe throw out a couple examples. I know it's always going to be a range, but is it terribly expensive to say get a patent filed?
It's an investment.
Yes.
It is, but if you don't make the investment, it can, you know, it's a lot more painful if you don't. Mm-hmm. And on the patent side, it's going to really depend on the nature of the invention.
We're talking about the level of complexity.
Yeah.
Look, in the real world, in the legal world, you're dealing with billable hours.
Yeah.
Is this a solution where you guys can solve this in 5 hours, or is this a solution where it's going to take, you know, hundreds of hours?
Yeah. Well, so with a patent, at least, you know, you're paying for an attorney to draft the document, the detailed, very technical document that describes the invention. And so that's what you're paying for, is the hourly rate for all that time. So you're talking, you know, probably on the low end, 8,000, mm-hmm. you know, up to that, you know, 25, 30. And again, it's really just going to depend on the technology, the complexity, and also, you know, how expansive do we want to go? Like, do we want to file just in the U.S. or do we want to cover, you know, throughout the world? Do we want to cover every single detail of this invention? Trademarks are quite a bit less. You know, and so that's why when you were asking earlier, like, mm-hmm. what's the number one issue, trademark, like it, because the cost is so much less, you know, certainly would make sense.
Now, copyright's not significantly difficult, is it?
No.
Do the, you mentioned the patents have an expiration date, 20 years. Trademarks, yeah. Copyrights, do the rest of those have expiration dates?
Copyright is 75 years, typically, from, you know, I guess the date that you draft or prepare it. And trademarks, they can live for forever, you know, as long as you are using the...
Actively using
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm.
And trade secrets, of course, if you protect them well.
I did read that over and over again. It has to be a secret.
You said you don't apply for a trade secret, though. You just keep it a secret, right?
That's right.
Exactly.
I mean, there's not a legal step there. Coca-Cola just never released their formula.
That's right.
And they actively try to keep it a secret. It still sounds like a lot of companies screw these things up, now, even though it sounds like it should be simple.
It is, I can't get a patent without detailing how I built it.
Right.
The patent, receiving the patent requires I'm giving the information to you or the patent office. Somebody's going to have that on file.
It's an exchange. So you give the public this knowledge. And in exchange, you get to protect it for 20 years. But you have to tell, like, you have to give the public the knowledge of how to build it and how to make it. So, yeah.
Cal, Stephen, thank you. Enjoyed it. Yeah. Coming up next, The Ramsey Show, 1 to 3, 3 to 7, Sport Talk. We'll talk to you all tomorrow.
That was fun.
Good job, guys.